The fastest growing cohort of someone to be homeless now is a woman over 50. Like, mate, that's, my mum, my auntie, that's just nuts. In our society, how do we stand by that and hear that and not want to do something about it?
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Pivot is a word most have used to describe surviving in these times. But for some, a more apt term would be scramble. Scrambling to find any means to bring in revenue. Scrambling to maintain the livelihoods of so many. Not just those that have lost jobs in hospitality, but those below the poverty line, those heading towards it, and the many that have lost almost everything. With the food world upside down, what impact has that had on the food businesses created to help those in need? Rob Kaslick is the founder of Too Good Co. Rob, how are you going?
Good, Hark. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks for joining us. You created Too Good to serve the communities most vulnerable. How much has the pandemic magnified this problem?
Oh, massive, mate. It's, it really, there were two things happened when the pandemic first went down. Firstly, a lot of the services that are already supporting the shelters that you know, we set up Too Good to Serve, they had to pull back because a lot of staff by volunteers. And then also, don't forget, we just kind of got through the bushfires. And so a lot of people donating money had already donated to the fires. And now, now the COVID happened, and so there's less money out there to be passed around. So not only were there's more people more vulnerable, but there was also less money that would come in from donations.
Well, the bushfires is almost a forgotten thing because the pandemic arrived just after it. Do you want to take us back to that time and what you guys were dealing with and confronted with during the bushfires?
Yeah, mate. Like most others, we were just kind of in shock with what was happening. What was happening to some of the farmers that we were working with? What was happening with the areas that that were close to us and the images that we saw? And what was overwhelming was seeing how the hospitality industry kind of lifted and fundraised and did many things to show their support to places like the South Coast. We didn't at the time. We were just trying to work out what we could do ourselves as a social enterprise. Like we service around 30 different places all around Sydney and Sydney Metro. Primarily, we do that through the sale of food that we're already selling, but also through some philanthropic donations. And so we're trying to stay in our lane, but we really wanted to have a response that we could do down in the South Coast. And so we end up sending our social worker down the South Coast and spend time with some of the shelters that were doing this, that were kind of still dealing with everything, all the fallout from the fires, to kind of really understand what the need was.
So you have two main verticals, food and things. Can you tell us about both of those and the impact that the pandemic had on those?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Alex. So we started as a soup kitchen in King's Cross. One of our volunteers, her dad was Greg Doyle, and he ended up designing these amazing soups for us. And we thought, how do we scale this soup kitchen without having to ask for money? And so Greg made these beautiful soups. I was full-time as an engineer and decided to create this little social enterprise where for each meal that we sell, we donate another meal to the soup kitchen, and we can kind of scale the soup kitchen to do, up to 1,000 meals each week.
Wow.
Yeah, no, that was definitely the goal. And then so we kind of launched, I was an engineer there, I launched with another engineer, and we kind of, had all of our mates in. And a really cool advertising agency actually come up with the words Too Good and create this little 60-second video, which we kind of pushed out. My mate and I kind of spent all weekend prior making these bloody pumpkin soups and mushroom soups, thinking we're going to go, this is going to fly. We're not going to have any work during the week to make these soups, and we end up selling a grand total of six soups. And so, what the hell are we going to do with these six leftover donated soups? We can't really give them out of the soup kitchen because we're feeding 50 people of the Wednesday night. And so I went up to a women's shelter called Wajet Women's and Girls Emergency Centre and knocked on the door and said, "Hi, my name's Rob. These amazing soups." We were using glass jars at the time, mainly because of, you know, sustainability and not having to recycle, not having to kind of any waste in the packaging. So these soups in these jars, and I said, "Are they designed by Greg Doyle?" And then the lady, the general manager, said, "Who's Greg Doyle?" And I said, "Well, actually, you know, he's Pierre Rashford, the famous chef." And they go, "Okay, we'll take them." But then another women's shelter started to say, "We want some of those soups." And another women's shelter wanted more of these soups a couple of weeks later. And I thought, what's going on here? You know, we kind of set up Too Good as a way to scale a soup kitchen, but all these women's shelters are asking for these soups. And so I went onto LinkedIn and found this lady called called Lisa McAdams, because while, you know, domestic violence impacts one in four, there was, to my knowledge, no one in my family had gone through it. I didn't have any kind of experience. And Lisa kind of gave me some really good tips around what was happening and what we're doing. Oh, that's really cool. And the next day, she actually wrote me a letter, and she wrote this letter, and I didn't know at the time, but she had gone through 6 or 7 years of physical and emotional abuse herself and ended up in a women's shelter in North Sydney. And she said, when people think about domestic violence, they rarely think about what was missing in that relationship, the love and the affection and the care. And she talked about this when she was arrived in a women's shelter herself. She was given a toiletry set. And for her, it wasn't the fact that, you know, someone had given her toiletries. She had no toiletries, so it was great. But it was more the fact that someone had gone to the effort of wrapping up this toiletry set and this beautiful cellophane and a neatened bow, and that someone had gone to the effort of neatening that bow demonstrated that she was of worth and she was of value. And she said, "Don't ever underestimate the fact that you're, you know, working with these top chefs means that, and, you know, packaging is kind of beautiful. It means that that person is actually worth something. And when you been told you're worthless for such a long period of time, you start to believe it and you have very little self-worth. And what we're actually creating was not really food, but it was all these kind of moments of worth." And so on kind of reading that letter, we decided to kind of move more into working with women's shelters and donating food to women's shelters, where that's where our impact was. And being an engineer, I thought, you know, how hard could it be to create our own toiletry set where, you know, we can try to recreate these pivotal moments in people's healing journey. And so we decided to create our own shampoo and conditioner and body wash and body lotion. And the first thing that nearly killed me, I still get like the goosebumps when I smell that scent, because we had to, like, we ended up selling lots and we had to pour them all ourselves and wrap them all ourselves. And it was kind of, I was thinking, what the hell am I doing with my life? I was still trying to be an engineer in the daytime and doing this in the part time. But then that's when we started off the two verticals, like the toiletries and the food. But both really are about you know, showing to the person it's that they're worthy of more than you know, a sandwich, or more than kind of a general product. This is something that's kind of created for them because, you know, we think they're absolutely worthy of it. So, you know, specifically, people buy something knowing that we're also doing something similar to a woman in a shelter, and that kind of that person feels, they feel heard and they feel kind of loved. And I think that's where, that's kind of the origin of what we do and why we do it. And as we started to grow a little bit, I end up getting the Food for Good Award in its first year. And what happened was, how we ended up getting all the chefs on board you know, got given the Food for Good Award, and when Fairfax gives out all its hats, and that was great to get an award. But what ended up happening was Miffy emailed all the chefs the next day and said, "Congratulations for, you know, advancing the culinary landscape of Sydney." But she CC'd everyone and didn't BC. So all of a sudden I had Peter Gilmore's email and Neil Perry's email. And I was like, "Oh, Neil, congratulations on your 27 hats last night. You know, we're doing this small thing for women's shelters. Would you give us a recipe?" And they said, "Yeah, no worries, Rob." And then Peter Gilmore said, "No problem." And so once you've, you know, got those kind of people on board, everyone else thought, "Who are these guys? Well, we'll give them a recipe too." And so it's just sort of taken off since then.
Your model is based on selling food, enabling you to then donate food. So what sort of impact did that have at the beginning of the pandemic when restaurants were closed?
Crazy. So you know, we were going really well. We were doing most of our food is mainly catering. We did lunches, individual lunches, but we do lots of catering gigs. And yeah, we saw a massive, like, it went to zero within you know, within 2 weeks. Our revenue for the food kind of went just nosedived, really. We were fortunate enough, so we were doing you know, with the soaps, we ended up getting some really good contracts with the corporates, and so that got us through for another month or so. And fortunately, we had some hand sanitizer that we were also selling to corporates, and so that kind of also got us through for about the first 1 month, maybe a little bit over 1 month of the pandemic. But then when everyone left to work from home, you know, no one was in their offices washing their hands, and so all of our sales also went to zero. So it was a big impact on us as far as revenue goes, and you know, we set up Too Good to serve the community's most vulnerable, and what kept me awake was like, now is when our community needs us the most, right? So now is when the services like ours are actually really needed, because you know, not only people in shelters are dealing with, you know, the general anxieties and leaving an abusive relationship, or you know, now they're kind of dealing with this pandemic and like a much more anxiety on top of everything. And as I said earlier, you know, a lot of the services food services also had to stop delivering food because either they were staffed by volunteers or they also had to work from home, and so it was just really difficult. So it really kept me awake on, you know, what can we do now in order for us to generate some revenue and to start, you know, to continue serving, you know, the community.
How bad is the problem in Australia, and what are you seeing as a result of the pandemic in regards to the poverty line and people that are most vulnerable?
Mate, so we're kind of not frontline. So we just speak to the shelters who are dealing with it, and they have all noticed a huge uptick in people trying to access homeless services. So that it's absolutely gone, you know, increased, you know, significantly. I don't really know the stats, but it certainly has. The need for services has increased incredibly. Also, you know, even during the fires, when any kind of stress hits a family, domestic violence goes up. That's just a fact of life. And so, you know, with the fires and now COVID, the uncertainty around, you know, your financials and the stresses around that, the domestic violence rate's gone up significantly. But also, you know, people are losing their jobs, and so it's certainly a big need for services to serve the community at the moment. And it's only going to get bigger with, you know, JobKeeper coming off and all of those things.
Have you changed operations in regards to the last 6 months because of what's happened?
People talking about pivoting, mate. We scrambled, like it was more like a mad scramble for us. Like we was like, okay, what the hell are we going to do in order to bring some revenue in, and how do we, you know, like it, I'm sure pivoting just sounds too elegant than what we were doing. We just really worked as hard as we could and we were making face masks. I was down at Spotlight Haberdashery kind of looking for elastic to make face masks for, you know, for some of these corporates who were there when they started to come back. So we did whatever we can. But also, and quite humbly, so the dream of Too Good is to grow the business and not have to fundraise and to use the profits from the things that we do, things that we sell, in order to do the program. So our programs are really expensive. So not only do we donate meals to shelters, but we also employ women from the shelters we serve as the pathway out of homelessness to make our food. So we have a couple of really great chefs, but our kitchen is staffed predominantly by unskilled people who are just trying to get out of shelters and back into the community. I was also wondering how are we going to make sure we're going to keep everyone employed through all of this. We did whatever we can. Our business model changed quite significantly, only because we instead of going social enterprise, we pivoted, if you want to call it that, into more charity. So we don't often put the hand out to say we need your help, but one of the first things I did was try to get ahead of the game and say, look, you know, I can see our revenues at zero. I can see the cliff. You know, we stand with the community's most vulnerable. We want to serve them. Will you back us? And some of our bigger corporate partners just dived in and said, yeah, we're with you. And then lots of people just, you know, quite humbly donated money to us. And so I guess our model, our delivery hasn't changed, but the way in which we sell food or donate food has changed. So at the moment, it's more of a philanthropic service as opposed to a business, which is just how it is. Like we'll definitely get back to being more business, but right now we're operating more like a traditional charity, And humbly, we were given so much money that we were able to meet the needs of the places like the South Coast. So one of the things that one of our social workers, Alex, did down there was, you know, speak to the services, and they, when they knew we had some really good food and fresh food, they wanted meals. And so we've been donating, we've been taking our Too Good truck down the South Coast every 6 weeks with, you know, over 1,000 meals to hand out. And mate, there's still people living in tents down there. It's nuts. Like, you know, the resilience of the communities down there, it's just incredible. And so it's also been really great for us to be a part of that, to be a very small part of, you know, that rebuilding of the South Coast, and by just simply, you know, letting them know that there are people that still that still care. One of the initial things when we did go down there, a lot of the commentary was, oh, look, you know, there's kind of saviors from Sydney coming down to help us down to the South Coast, you know, what's going on here, they're all talk. Really, like, Alex came back and he's like, we have to do something. If we're going to commit, we're going to have to do something. And so, you know, we were fortunate enough to be able to say, like, for 1 year, every 6 weeks, we're just going to do it. We're going to make it work. And, you know, we're halfway or three quarters of our way through doing that at the moment. It's just an amazing thing to be part of, to be able to take these beautiful meals down there and just to hear some of the nice things that come back, you know, just those simple things of, you know, thanks for still caring. There's so much else going on in the world. For everyone right now, but you know, you've been able to still care for us, and so that means a lot to me.
What's been some of the challenges in creating this model to help those in the community, and has some things surprised you along the way?
Yeah, sure. I think we started off doing, for every meal that we sell, we donate the same meal to a shelter, and it was really kind of around, one of the things from the soup kitchen was, you know, was around equity, and you know, just because you're in a shelter doesn't mean you shouldn't get the beautiful meal by Carly Kwong or, you know, or whoever the chef is we're working with. One of the things that, and then we realized that it was more important to have two equal clients as opposed to, you know, trying to give them the same meal, what, you know, because a meal, so a lawyer from you know, the CBD will eat perhaps something different to someone, what they want in a shelter when they're kind of dealing with lots of other traumas. And so one of the things we've changed is, you know, the meal is not exactly the same anymore, and that's purely driven because of what the client wants. And so that was a big learning for us. The biggest thing also, I think, for me, and what I still struggle with is the employment piece. So, you know, each quarter we employ up to 8 women who are all either at a homeless or at risk, high risk of homelessness. And it's just that constant balance between trying to take on work, take on business and grow the social enterprise, but then not trying to take on too much when we're actually sending the people backwards and kind of putting too much stress on them. The social enterprise works, or the employment actually works. And it's the reason why I gave up my day job as an engineer, is when you kind of see the transformational impacts it has when you actually employ someone, when you actually, all you're really doing is believing in that person again. When you kind of, I was doing the interviews at the start and, you know, someone couldn't even look you in the face, and, you know, they couldn't answer your basic questions, and we gave them a job because they wanted to re-enter. We knew they, you know, there was a spark in them that they wanted to do that. And within, you know, 5 or 6 weeks, there was this transformation happened when they started to believe in themselves again. They're away, and just to be part of that was just so, so special. And I know that's what drives everyone in our team, to be part of that employment program. But it's certainly a challenge, and it's certainly, you know, something that we want to keep doing and do much more of, is that employment piece. And I think that's where, you know, that, you know, if you ask me where I wanted to be in 3 years' time, it's to come up with a way to where we can do what we're doing in this kitchen, but times 10, like, how do we employ more people and give that opportunity and give people their self-worth back through that employment, especially now, right, when unemployment rates are going through the roof, and in particular, to a more of a degree, women are, you know, are becoming more unemployed faster than the average. So,
given your exposure to all these issues since beginning Too Good, are there some simple things you think that the government could change or people could be aware of in order to alleviate these issues or solve some problems?
You know, I think the first thing is awareness, mate. The first thing is just being aware of these are the issues. Like, the fastest growing cohort of someone to be homeless now is a woman over 50. Like, mate, that's, you know, my mum, my auntie, you know, that's just nuts. In our society, how do we stand by that and hear that and not want to do something about it? And I know the government knows it's a big issue. We have some federal government funding in order to learn from our program and potentially how to scale that program if it all goes well. So they know that, you know, that right now, you know, the numbers are only going to continue a lot, and the government's trying to coming up with ways on how to stem that, how to stop that kind of explosion of number of people. When we first started employing women over 50, you know, we heard about their stack. So I said, like, you know, let's just employ only women over 50. Let's see what we can do as a small business to make a dent in this. Of course, it's only going to be a small dent, but I thought it was well worth a crack. And we couldn't find anyone in shelters. It was mainly that they hadn't got there yet. So what we ended up doing was, I think I put in the you know, Australia's most discriminated ad in Seek. I said, look, we're looking for kitchen staff to be part of our program. You must be a woman and you must be over 50. Fortunately, Seek didn't pull it down. We end up kind of getting, we're oversubscribed with people. But now there's, you know, women in shelters, you know, a lot more women over 50 in shelters at the moment. So, yeah, I think that the big thing is just to be aware that it's happening, and also to, you know, and I say this humbly, is to check, you know, your biases. Like, I still let know I need, you know, I have biases around age, and when we first started, we were really worried about, you know, what, how we're going to have to change things. Now we're employing women over 50, and almost, you know, myself putting a bit of a stereotype on what's going on here. But it's just learning more about and being more open to employing, you know, people over 50. I think it's you know, if our small business can, you know, can employ 8 every quarter, surely more businesses can look at least opening up some positions or being open to more, you know, employing more people over 50, in particular women. I know that the people that we employ, you know, that some of the stories around them, you know, applying for hundreds of jobs and not even hearing back once they kind of knew that the age of the person applying. So just trying to be more open with employing people over 50, I think that will go a long way.
You mentioned earlier about some of the collaborations you've done with influential chefs, but you've got a pretty amazing chef on board recently, Jane Strode. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, mate. So we our head chef left, and before end of last year, we didn't have we put an ad out. We weren't really getting anyone, you know, that we thought could really help move the dial for us. And so, you know, I went to meet a friend for a drink, and I was there a little bit early. So I was like, you know, like, surely there's an amazing female chef out there that would love the job. You know, that working for us, it's a 9-to-5 job, Monday to Friday. You know, while we do pump out a lot of food, it is a pretty good role for a chef, I think. And so I think I went on to one of the women in hospitality sites, actually, and then saw Jane was a mentor. And so I kind of stalked her and then sort of sent her a message to say, hey, Jane, we're looking for a head chef. Would you be interested? And she responded via Instagram, said, yeah, actually, Rob, I would love, why don't I come in for an interview? And I said, well, fair enough. And I kind of got a bit nervous and thought, all right, it means business now, let's do this. And so, yeah, Jane came in and she's been great. She's been really great. Amazing, amazing chef. And great person too.
What sort of role and influence has she had on the business since joining?
Yeah, she's had a great role. So you know, she's had well, I guess the you know, with her experience. So one of the things I often talk about is, you know, going from you know, we were working in a soup kitchen basically. When the soup kitchen closed, we had the afternoon of the soup kitchen, and then we moved into a nightclub when the lockout laws happened. So we were kind of very grassroots, I guess. We certainly always had a really good product, but we were kind of still fairly grassroots or corner store. And I think with Jane's
expertise. She really helped build some really good structure into us, and with her experience, obviously with Maryvale and all of it, all of her, you know, restaurant experience, she really helped to, you know, allow us to grow up really and be more professional in the way we do things, not just in the kitchen, but, you know, all throughout the business. So, yeah, she's been a great influence on that, and also a great mentor to the women on the program.
You're working at the coalface and seeing what's happening out there. What do you think the next couple of years are going to look like for the communities you look after?
One of the, I don't know, I think it's, I think we haven't really seen the mental health issues. I think there's going to be much more need for connection. I think one of the, you know, like even prior to COVID, we were becoming more and more disconnected. I think one of the great things that's happened for us anyway with COVID is trying to be more connected with our community and more connected with our food, in fact. So working closer with farmers and trying to be more connected with our community. But I know, you know, through isolation and even people working from home more now, as you know, as a new normal, whatever it is, sort of comes back, connection is going to be a really big part, and in particular connection to your local community. I really think that that's kind of the next phase. We'll still be more and more disconnected by having less connections through our work if we're working from home more, or indeed if we're unemployed. So I really think there's going to be more and more issues or higher rates of mental health concerns in the community. And so I think, you know, whatever we can do to help to remedy that through connection, you know, through connecting people, through food. You know, one of the values that we've kept from the soup kitchen is kind of sitting down for lunch every day as a team and sharing a meal and trying to kind of remain connected through that. And I think, you know, as you'd know, food has that beautiful way of connecting people. And so providing we always try to eat together, we'll always be connected. And one of the things that we're trying to do more of is encourage more people to, you know, to stop and share a meal together. And so I think if, you know, food will always be a big part of that connection, as long as we can continue to, you know, to be closely connected with our food and food systems.
Your role with Too Good is to help others, but how have you felt personally during this period of time?
Mate, it's been tough, mate, to be honest. You know, you put on the game face when you're in the office and you're trying to, you know, like always be optimistic and this is how we're going to do things and communicate, this is where we're at and make sure everyone feels comfortable in their roles. But behind the scenes, it's kind of just, you know, like, oh shit, you know, I can see, you know, I've put my life into Too Good and I wouldn't have it any other way. Like, I love what I do. But seeing, you know, seeing the revenue fall off a cliff and seeing, you know, and still kind of not really knowing when things are going to come back again, it's certainly been quite challenging for me personally. But yeah, I don't know. I'm optimistic. There's, you know, some movement happening now and more people are starting to come back to the office. And so optimistic, but it's certainly been a really hard challenge to, you know, that whole Groundhog Day of, you know, doing the same and not really kind of get, like, you know, just trying to survive. One of the things I did recently that gave me a lot of hope and confidence is to relook at a 3-year plan. Where do we want to be in 3 years, you know? And like, because this whole year it's just been looking down and how do we get the hell out of this kind of situation? How do we, you know, plug these holes and how do we make sure everyone's employed and all those other things that, you know, we do mostly. But because it's, you know, there's been fires and there's been all this stuff happening within our business, you know, I've been focusing very much on the day to day and not trying, you know, I lost a bit of sight on where we're going and where we want to be in 3 years. And that really gave me some comfort that, you know, we're going to be okay. Like we'll be okay. And this is, you know, we're here actually to serve the community. As long as we continue to serve the community, we might have to do a little bit less at the moment, or, you know, our original long-term plan might be on, you know, on ice, but, you know, we need to reset and look at where we are now and kind of looking, looking forward, what could potentially be in 3 years really gave me a boost of energy, I guess, as we ramp up now into Christmas.
What you've created has made such an important difference for so many. How can people help you with what you're doing?
Mate, the very easiest thing, the most easy thing is to buy our stuff, to be honest, mate. So we, one of the other challenges, we're focused business to business, and so we're now about to launch, I'll give you the scoop, we're about to launch a really cool campaign November 1 to start to target more business to consumer, and how do we, you know, increase revenue through working with, you know, going straight to the website and delivering online. So we're at a big campaign starting November 1 with a collaboration with an amazing creative, actually. So it's more on the Good Things side, but allows us to send anywhere in the country. So that will be our kind of roll into Christmas, and looking at how do we, you know, provide gifts for Christmas that give twice. And so that's going to be our little kind of late pivot to try to pivot to more to business to consumers, and how do we work with the community by selling them things that they want and they want to buy, and so that we can continue to do the good work here in the kitchen.
Well, Rob, what you're doing is extraordinary, and we're very honoured to have you on Deep in the Weeds. Please keep in touch, and we'll talk again soon.
Hark, really, thank you for allowing to share my message and encourage more people to get involved.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we share the stories of Australia's hospo community, suppliers and producers in search of hope during this pandemic. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.